Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY23 earnings conference call of Cholamandalam Financial Holdings Limited, hosted by DAM Capital Advisors Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Pritesh Bumb from DAM Capital Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Rochelle. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. We, on behalf of DAM Capital, would like to welcome the management of Cholamandalam Financial Holdings Limited. Today, we have with us Mr. Sridharan Rangarajan, Director, and Mr. N. Ganesh, Manager and CFO of Cholamandalam Financial Holdings, along with Mr. V. Suryanarayanan, MD, and Mr. S. Venugopalan, CFO of Chola MS. Now, without further ado, we'll hand over the call to Mr. Sridharan for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you. Good morning to all of you, and hopefully everyone is safe, your family is fine, and kindly take care. So just a few initial remarks. As you know that, it's a consolidation of Chola Finance and Chola Insurance at the Chola Financial Holdings level. And to start with, I think the consolidated results consist of Cholamandalam Investment and Finance Company and Chola MS General Insurance Accessories and Chola MS Risk as JV. The total income for the quarter ended June 2022 increased by 10% to 3,963 crores, while profit after tax increased by 63% to 582 crores, primarily due to reduction in impairment charges on loans. On a standalone basis, the quarter ended March 2022 is 210 crores as against 212 crores in the corresponding quarter of the prior year. Losses for the quarter ended June 2022 is 0.26 crores as against 0.93 crores in the corresponding quarter of the previous year. Cholamandalam Investment Finance Company is well covered, and you have all the required details in the presentation as well as in the earnings call. I'll move to Cholamandalam MS General Insurance. Q1 FY23 witnessed an industry growth of 22.3%, and private sector grew by 33%. Chola MS registered a GWP of 1,292 crores in Q1 FY23, with an increase of 43.3% over the prior year, driven by growth across products, channels, and partners. The previous year's slower growth was also due to the lockdown situation in Q1 of last year. Motor, representing 61% of the portfolio, grew by 35%. Commercial, representing 17% of the portfolio, grew by 44%. And health, accident, travel, representing 11% of the portfolio, grew by 67%. Within motor, two-wheeler and passenger car share has gone up to 22% and 32% respectively, compared to 20% and 29% last year. Commercial vehicle has come down from 59.1% to 46%. Volume from new channels, new verticals, OEM and financial channels had a very good growth. The company is continuing to maintain its leadership position in Tamil Nadu and Chhattisgarh and bettering its performance in Andhra and Telangana. Chola MS, one of the leaders in the compromise settlement and be able to save more than 50% level in terms of average CRP. RBI has increased the repo rate continuously, which resulted in substantial improvement in the yield for the fresh investment deployment. However, the MTM value of the existing book would have a negative impact on the profit booking. The company's long-term policies growth was more and as per the IRDA direction, the company needed to upfront absorb the full cost for all long-term policies. However, the UPR get earned over the long-term policies, creating an embedded value in the balance sheet. So with this, I will open up for Q&A, and we'll take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question at this time, please enter star then one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may enter star and two. Participants are requested to please use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may enter star one now. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Ladies and gentlemen, you may enter star one to ask a question. Our first question is from the line of Devansh Negotia from SIMPL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So just a couple of questions. So one is, again, when we look at our operating expenses as a percentage of net written premium, so it continues to stay elevated. The run rate is around 41% of net written premium. And when we compare it against Lombard, that's around 30-33%. Against Allianz, that is 28%. Against Royal Sundaram, that is 25%. So I'm just trying to understand. And even like for us, before 2 years before, we used to do around 30-33% of net written premium as operating expenses. So this sharp jump, even in Q1 when our prepaid expenses have been absorbed, this run rate is still at a very elevated level. So if you can just give a perspective of where we are doing these investments, that would be really helpful.
Yeah. Let me explain in relation to the past. So since you mentioned about our own past ratios, our past ratios were when we were having the cost spread over the period of the policies. As you are aware, last year IRDA directed us to absorb it upfront, and we are following the revised method effective April 22. So the number, our own numbers of the past that you are mentioning may not be really comparable to our rates of last year or the rates of the present. So that is one. Second is, I have mentioned even in the earlier calls, strict comparison with the industry players may not be really appropriate, considering that many of them have a larger proportion of crop business, employer-employee group health business, and government health business. All these businesses are either on tender basis or because of the inherent high loss ratios that these businesses have very low acquisition costs, as in the case of group health employer-employee. This proportion is high for many players in the competition. For us, our presence in all the segments that I have mentioned is very marginal, very, very marginal. And even in the group health employer-employee, our total volume in quarter one was only about 36 crores of the 1,290 crores of volumes that we have done. So therefore, we do not have the advantage with respect to the cost to GWP or NWP as others may have. So that is where the difference between competition and us lie.
But when we, let's say, if I look at even Lombard, okay, for that, if I look at the sales mix, it's very much similar because they have a very small book of crop insurance. And even within health insurance, which is 20% of their mix, there is a, let's say, a 7-8% of group health. So at least for Lombard, our mix is very much comparable. Or probably it is not at such a deviation where we are spending at least 10% higher as a percentage of operating expenses, as a percentage of net written premium. And even when I look at, let's say, a Bajaj Allianz, even for that, if we look at the mix is around 40-45% motor, 20% is health, and within that some part is your group health. And for crop, there is some portion that they have. But if I look at the difference from Allianz, that is, the difference is around 13-14%. For Royal Sundaram also, even if I adjust it for the group policies and crop insurance, even then the difference is staggeringly high. So I'm not able to really understand that why there is such a big difference. And even for us, if based on historical numbers, if I adjust 10% of operating expenses and if I elevate it, then what is the ROEs, ROE targets that we have going forward? If we have to actually increase the operating expense by 10% as a percentage of NWP, that increases the combined ratio structurally by 10%. So if you can just share a perspective here.
Yes. If you were to look at crop, yes, some players have in much larger proportion, some players have in smaller proportion, and it is not my intent to name any player in this call, as this is only about Chola MS, but more to give a perspective. Many players have a group health business which are in the range of 300-350 crores. These are available in the public domain, that both the regulator and the insurer thing puts out, the council puts out. And our numbers in comparison to that is what I mentioned. It is only about 10% of the size of other players in terms of the group health business that they have put out. And as I said, the group health business, employer-employee, that's what I'm referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, as even a capped expense structure only at 7.5. So that inherent advantage will always be there, but which advantage is always squared up by a higher loss ratio on the claims front. So that is the picture there. We do not write that business, more as a board policy, in view of the volatility as well as the adverse loss ratios, and therefore, that advantage may not reflect in our cost structure. That is part A in relation to the broader competition comparison. The second is our own business profile is something that I can talk about as a good proportion of long-term business. Of course, a long-term business would also get reflected in the net written premium. I don't deny that. It is there, but that proportion has been growing fast. And under the new dispensation of the IRDA guideline directive, we are absorbing those costs upfront. And as we grow faster, our growth rate on a lower base was, as Mr. Sridharan mentioned, was at 43%. But we don't expect that growth rate to sustain at 40% or 43% as we go along. The numbers were, even July is out, and we are growing at about 21%. So the full year growth, as it stabilizes to a moderate level, we will find that this structure, expense structure, will also moderate.
So for next one or two years, if you can.
Yeah.
Can you share the target for the combined ratio for next one, 2 years, the growth and the ROE profile for next one, 2 years?
While we don't generally make forward-looking statements for the company as such, but then we are looking at end of the year ROE in the range of about 12.5% to 13% is what we will have for the year, considering our own growth plans and the level of growth that we would have by the end of the year. This is at an estimation that is being made by the management internally.
But if you look at, let's say, our investment leverage currently is around 6.5 times, which I think the solvency has decreased. And if we are looking at 12-13% ROE, then to play the recovery of auto cycle over the next 2-3 years, the investment leverage will keep expanding because I think our ROE will be lower than the expected growth. So how will this interplay, if you can just share a perspective, considering all the news flow around the recovery in auto cycle, and we have a large mix of auto insurance book in our own business.
Yeah.
So how do you think this would play out?
You are right about the investment leverage, which is one of the highest in the industry and therefore a strong point in terms of the investment corpus and the related yield that it gets for the industry. But there are 2-3 factors that are developing. One is, as you are aware, the Motor Vehicles Act has been notified effective 1st April. And there are both Supreme Court and a few high courts have also confirmed the applicability of many of the provisions that are favorable to insurers for accidents occurring on or after April 1, 2022. Mm-hmm. So what this would mean is that the speed with which the claims get reported is poised to go up, and in the revised procedure, the speed of settlement will also happen. So that is one development which is both positive, because the uncertainty of motor TP loss ratios for the future is poised to reduce. One impact that it would have is that the cash outflow will be faster towards the end of the H2 as we proceed to settle those claims faster. So this is the effect on the leverage. The second dimension is our own ambitions to grow in motor as to what it would be. We are cut clearly on the path of, while we will certainly grow strong in motor, and we are just about to join fourth largest amongst the private sector in the motor line of business. While we will grow, but the diversification in the balance sheet in terms of business profile will also be to keep continuously reducing the motor proportion. So that also will be happening with growth both on the property side, where even as you can see in Q1, we have grown much faster and the trend is poised to continue. As also in our traditional businesses of personal accident, which has come back strongly, and retail health, both in the bundled side as well as in the retail side. So the growth in these will be at a faster clip and which will keep reducing the proportion of motor business.
Okay. And in case of, so this has been notified long back, but this has actually not played out. So I think the, can you just help us understand on ground how this claim intimation, when is it actually going to start playing? Because I think this has been notified 6 months or a year back. Or probably even...
notified in March as effective from 1st April. Amongst the many provisions that are being notified, the single most important one is the time limit for intimation of a motor accident claim, which is now placed clearly at 6 months from the date of accident.
Mm-hmm.
Motor third party typically, historically, has had a practice of getting reported even up to 7 years, which is what brought out a high level of uncertainty. More importantly, in the amended provisions, the power of courts even to condone a delay has been taken out, and which provision has been confirmed categorically by Kerala High Court and in a veiled way has also been confirmed by Supreme Court in some of its recent decisions.
Mm-hmm. But sir, like I said, you mentioned 1st April 22, it has been notified, right? It's
yeah.
Applicable from 1st April
22. Accidents on or occurring after 1st April 22.
So the question is how it is actually playing out right now, because what I heard is that this is still not being playing out, the 6 months timeline. What is the response that we are seeing from the court, and how it is actually playing out right now?
These confirmations by both Kerala High Court and Supreme Court has happened sometime in July. So I'm sure the entire legal fraternity will take cognizance of this. And anyway, even the first claim has time to be reported until October.
Yeah, that's true.
So we will get to see. Probably we will clearly have an indication by the month of, by October end or November. We will see as to how this is actually happening in the market. What I meant to say is that these confirmations by apex courts is positive for the industry and for any player who has a larger presence in the motor line of business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in case of when we look at the run rate of advertisement and sales promotion, it used to be around 60 to 80 crores up till Q2 FY22. That increased to 130 crores in Q3 FY22, and it increased by almost 100 crores in Q4 FY22 to 183 crores. Now, when we look at all this increase, is only because of the absorption in fixed cost, which is happening upfront, or we have also structurally increased some kind of ad spends, or there is a target to grow some segments of the business. Because what I see that these are largely, they have increased on motor insurance only. So as a percent of net written premium, it was, I think, around 17%. So that has increased to 21-22%. So is it only the change in accounting which has brought in such delta, or even we have stepped up our advertisement in some segments, and if at all any benefits we are expecting from them, if you can just share your perspective there.
Broadly, this is a combination of multiple factors. One is the absolute increase in volume itself. So we've had a 43% growth, which in absolute terms is about a quarter to quarter is a 400 crore accretion. So that strong growth, going by the present industry structure on costs, pulls in an element of cost structure in its multiple forms. So, and within that, the proportion of the long-term business is even higher. In our traditionally, we have been strong and doing good volumes in niche segments, profitable segments of personal accident, dwellings, and then health benefits and all of that. And you can see in the page 49 as to the rate of growth that is there in the PA and health and dwellings will come under the fire segment. So the profile of business that we have been growing has also meant that costs have been pulled in. As to real marketing, proper advertising expenses which is there, right, there were elements, for example, in Q1, Chola MS associated itself with RCB in the IPL, so there were some related advertising costs which were also there, which were expensed off in Q1.
Okay.
Well, anything else?
Yeah, it's a combination, as you rightly said. You know, there are expenses incurred on advertisement like Delimetro and also in the FM. These are also part of that. But every segment requires a level of, you know, campaign and also branding increase from the point of view. So the advertisement expenses tend to be higher when the volume grows up.
Okay. Okay, sure. I'll run again.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from the line of Sanket Godha from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, if you can quantify out of the total GWP or NWP you have written in the current quarter, how much would be long-term in nature, that is benefit-based health or PA or dwelling business as a percentage of the total business? And how much different it is compared to last year, and how it could potentially play out for full year of FY23?
Yeah, Sanket, you know, the long-term policies which are embedded into the GWP, you know, as such, you know, is growing for Solaiman. So in Q4 2022, we are talking about Q1 22, we were at 5% level, and it has grown to 10.6 by Q1 2023. Clearly, that shows that, you know, the long-term premium embedded in the form of dwelling, health and PA is growing for us. That growth will have an impact on the cost, as you know, that, you know, it is all absorbed upfront into the P&L.
But this 10.3 as a percentage of GWP, probably business could be still seasonal and it's got upfronted in the quarter one. Do you expect for the full year this number to be around 10? Maybe if it comes back to 7 or 8 for the full year, naturally you'll see a better OPEX ratio to play out in subsequent quarters. So that's the whole idea why I'm asking this question, whether this number will remain at 10 you can see this number to come off a bit, and therefore you can see an improvement in the OpEx ratio.
Sanket, let me take this question. So, since these are by and large profitable lines of businesses, as I mentioned a while ago, in terms of dwellings and PA and health benefit, our intent would be to try and maintain that high proportion, because these are inherently and economically profitable businesses. But with normally motor is a larger season as we go along. Q1 is the leaner season for motor, and that will be much larger as we go along in the rest of the 9 months. That would play out in terms of reducing the percentage. So I would tend to think that the 10.6 could come down to about 8.5 or so by when we reach the end of the year position. But our intent would be to grow these businesses.
As a seasonality factor, as you said, probably it will come back to 8.5 kind of a level. That's the way I need to read it, right, sir? Okay, and yeah, if you can do the same exercise, probably our OPEX ex of commission was almost 3,700 crores. So, if you are comfortable, this 3,700 crores, how much is towards the long-term business and how much is towards the annual policies expenditure? If a rough cut number, whether it is in line with the 10.6 in the OPEX or it is on the higher side, maybe that will give a picture how OPEX ratios will evolve going ahead.
Yes, I get refer to slide number 48 where we have explained on a note, we have given the two costs separately. There is a 33 crores of the sourcing cost incrementally. That's a long-term premium embedded cost that is, is already embedded. It is also including the motor part, and also it is embedded the WP part. 33 crores is the sourcing cost. Additionally, that has been there in the Q1 23. In addition to that, you know that we have grown at 43% growth, which is, because last year's part. That has also got some impact on that. We are one of the fastest to growing Q1 part. So of that, there is an impact towards the acquisition cost being absorbed fully. So that comes to around 59 crores there. Together, if you look at it, 59 crores and 33 crores is fully absorbed incrementally in Q1 2023.
To add to what Venu has said, the annual portion will naturally moderate because there it will start reflecting in the earnings as we go along. And the growth rate also will not continue at that same clip. It was on a much smaller base. The base effect was there.
Got it, sir. Yeah, but this since you have touched upon the growth, quarter one growth was 43. I believe that growth to sustain for the full year might be tough. So just wanted to understand what is the growth rate we are looking for the full year compared to 43 what we have reported in Q1. And which segments, honestly, in Q1, all products are fired very well. If there will be anything, some skew towards some other product or from your perspective?
Rather than putting out a percentage, I would see our growth was 1.9x of industry growth, GI, excluding the SAHI players. If you had to look at it, it was 1.9x. So we would tend to think that we would still by end of the year be at about 1.5 to 1.6x of GI growth. I think that is the kind of growth that we expect. And as I said earlier, our own emphasis in property and the other lines will be larger given our conscious bid to diversify and de-risk from motor.
Got it, sir. And just on the loss ratio, just wanted to clarify on motor part, the 76% loss ratio in motor OD seems to be a little elevated despite having mix in favor of a little better profitable products like CVs and two-wheelers, which are perceived to be lower motor OD loss-making products. Still we have a little elevated motor OD loss ratio. So just wanted to understand if it's more to do with discounting or you see this number to improve going ahead or not. That's point number one on motor OD. On motor TP, the 78% loss ratio naturally with claim frequency improving, it has increased. But the 78 somewhere we have baked in MDA benefit or it is without MDA benefit in this 78% and as MDA benefit will kick in, this number can potentially improve by end of the year.
Sankat, I only invite attention. I think you are also reading only from page 53 of the presentation deck for the benefit of others. You can see that the motor OD loss ratios have moderated from Q4 levels of 82.8, but still is elevated as compared to the past. But by and large, in line with the industry in terms of what other players are experiencing in terms of OD loss ratios as well. Very clearly, the pressure both on discounting is there, and we are also seeing many of the OEMs increasing the labor charges as well as the parts price. So the general increase is between 4 to 6% by almost all OEM manufacturers with respect to material prices, parts prices. So this inflationary effect has been there and will probably continue. But the question is how the players are now getting that much more granular in terms of their choices that we make in respect of geographies and subcategories. And Chola MS is also doing fourth. So the other advantage that Chola MS will have going forward is that our commercial vehicle business, especially with respect to the financial tie-ups, is slowly restoring back. And when that gets restored, there will be some positive effects to come out of that. We can also see the proportion of CVs going up from present level, but certainly not up to the levels of what it used to be in the past in 2018, 19 or even 20. So that is one trend on the motor OD part. On the TP side, yes, this obviously we have not considered any Motor Vehicle Act benefits that are there. On this, we would definitely want to wait and see as to how it actually gets adopted in the marketplace. While the reaction of courts initially has been very positive, as I mentioned earlier, we would love to see it actually pan out and get implemented, at which point I'm sure our actuaries would take a relook in terms of advising us on what ratios that we should be providing for.
Got it, sir. And last question. On health side, if you can break down the health business, I think we did around 138 crores in the current quarter. So if you can break it down into benefit-based and indemnity to extend what we have done.
138 crores, our benefit would be about 74 crores.
Okay. So the contribution of benefit definitely has gone up in current quarter compared to last 2 years, right, sir?
Yeah, it has gone.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, before we take the next question, we'd like to remind participants that you may enter star 1 to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Pritesh Bam from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So just wanted to check on investment yield. We're still at about 6.2 and it's broadly unchanged from last quarter. So do we see the investment book itself or the yield picking up from here on? And how do we, does the profitability start improving without increasing the leverage? That was the first question.
Can I answer that? Actually, the yield started increasing, as you rightly said about that. There are two things that is happening. The incremental investments is also operationally, growing. After the COVID and all is over now, we started accruing to the investments. That is getting deployed at the higher yield. That is clearly, as a part of that, is advantage to Chola MS. Also, the redemption is also... we have been talking about 380 crores of creation. in the Q1, which is the normalized one. Compared to the previous year, it would be much higher. That shows that we have a normalized level of this thing. Our average duration is around 3.6 years. That shows that, you know, the current yield seems to be lower, basically because of the current investments which are there as a part of that is, you know, at the lower yield. Having said that, the incremental investments are getting deployed at a higher yield. And in fact, in July, you know, after the price revision and all, what we have done as a part of that is around 7.7%. So basically, that is going to give a clear advantage to July month in terms of the investment income.
Sure. So the 3.6 duration means that we will have a large part of investments done in the COVID period itself. That's why the yield is lower. Because doesn't make sense, right? Because we would have invested at about 5.5 or 6% when the yields were at that levels.
One advantage of a lower duration, because if you compare with other companies where the duration would be used to be higher, whenever they invest at a, you know, longer duration, it will take much more period for the redemption. So that means that that continue to be the lower yield. But for us, it is 3.6, which in also includes 5.3% of our portfolio is in the bank deposits, which are, you know, less than 1 year part of it. So when it gets matured, we get the clear advantage on that particular front. It is a strategy that we adopted in the last year during the COVID, that we deploy a major portion of the, you know, creation into the bank deposit of less than 1 year, and then redeploy it at the higher yield. So that is really happening now, and those deposits, when it is getting matured, is getting deployed at the very higher rate, particularly when the RBI has increased it, and also the all the, you know, even now we are not investing in a long term. We are increasing the, you know, tenure slightly up to get the more the yield, but we are one of the companies, you know invest not more than around 4.5 to 5 years as a duration. So that will give us a, you know, the duration risk will be very, very little for us.
Sure, that is clear. Second question was, we mentioned our mix change which can happen in the motor OD side. Just wanted to check, does the OPEX also change when we do more of CVs compared to PVs? Does the OPEX change?
The OPEX will change as we take our foot off the OEM business and move towards more of financial business. So as volumes from financial tie-ups go up, then the pressure will reduce. And also, more importantly, in terms of cars and two-wheelers would have a larger pressure in terms of OPEX. CVs could have a lower pressure.
Sure. And so can you just mention how many financial tie-ups we have today and how much we are looking for do it in next financial year, I mean FY23?
Some of our larger channels have been very clearly our own sister company, Solar Finance, is a large contributor. And there is a natural rub-off effect. As they grow, it means more business for us. Especially if they grow faster in commercial vehicles, it creates advantages for us. We continue to operate in some of our leading relationships with IndusInd Bank, with many small finance banks like AU, Equitas, and then and also get volumes from other smaller financiers. So these volumes are there, but these are some of our larger traditional and long-term channels.
Sure, that means as banks are growing, and we'll also see the reflection of the same. Yeah.
Yeah. And these are larger vehicle finance players, and when they grow, naturally there will be a volume growth for us.
Sure. And same question for when we look at motor and health mix. You, I think, mentioned that health mix may go down back to that 8.5-9%. So again, there also OPEX could change a little bit towards better side, or health is much more cost effective than motor.
See, it is all cost, there are multiple drivers there. I mentioned that in that 8% is in terms of overall long term, which will also include dwellings business, which is the overall long term premium business. Naturally, the cost structure for benefit products are very different, and it all depends on our own appetite, and then it's a pure economic benefits. It may hurt this year's financials, but the value that you are building in the balance sheet will be much stronger.
Sure, that is clear. Thank you so much. That's it from my side.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a reminder to participants, you may enter star 1 to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Am I audible?
So your line is not very clear. Could you use your handset, please?
Is this better?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So just a few questions from my side. First is, you know, on your retail health business, if you can kind of quantify how much proportion of the business comes from renewal side, especially on the indemnity part of the business. The second is, and you know, this is not from a quarter perspective, but more, let's say, from a long-term or, you know, historical trend perspective, how do you see the claims really change on the indemnity side as the book vintage increases, be it across customers or across geographies? My third question is on the wholesale businesses or the B2B businesses out there, excluding group health. So what are the key USPs that you have in this business to dominate the segment over a longer frame? Is it pricing or is it the relationships that you have out there? And last, if you can quantify how much of your overall premiums is originated from the from the Chola Finance entity out there. Those are my four questions.
Yeah, so let me proceed. See, definitely the health, you asked about the health indemnity as to how it can pan out. The point is health indemnity will always be susceptible to medical inflation, which can grow anywhere between 10 to 14% depending on geographies. Metros obviously will have a much higher inflationary tendency as against the tier 2 markets. So therefore, there will be the need to do periodic price corrections for retail health indemnity. That is on one side. And second is continuous addition of new customers to the portfolio is also essential, because when the renewals get extended to the 7th or 8th cohort, and when it reaches that level, it is more a matter of time that the claim comes from the policyholder. So it is inevitable at that point. It's more a probability of whether it is going to come in this year or next year
or the year after.
So that is how the tendency is likely to be. So the success of a good, strong franchise in retail health indemnity especially would always be to the ability to add new policyholders and maintain it at a certain proportion to the overall. So that is the health indemnity part. Benefit aspects, your specific question on what we are doing. It certainly emanates from many of the long-term relationships that we have. Some of the names that I mentioned earlier, those, as also from other partners. These were went through a lull during the COVID period when they had their own issues and problems. But now with the business restoring, we are seeing an uptick in the volumes of the benefit business, both in terms of the health as well as the personal accident that we are talking of. That is the second part. And overall premium from Chola Finance, it is there in, I think we have put that out in Uh, that figure. It is there in which page? Page 60. It is already there. We have put out in terms of the volumes that we get. In terms of the captive channel, which is our own insurance express outlets plus Chola Finance, that number is there. And if you are to look at, this is almost 396 out of the 1290. So in a way, roughly around 31%, which is also mentioned there. So that's the proportion of business that we get. And we expect this proportion to grow to about 35 at least by the end of the year.
Okay, and on the wholesale
anything, if I had missed anything, please bring it up, please.
Yes, two things. So one is the right to win in the wholesale or the B2B businesses, be it in fire, maybe, you know, some of these B2B segments. How should one differentiate one player from the other, and what are the key USPs to dominate this segment?
Very clearly, we have. Over a period of last 2-3 years, we have increased our capacities to reinsurance arrangements. We have provided the returns to the reinsurers in terms of the profitability, which has made them enhance our reinsurance capacities, which is almost double from what it was in FY19. So, which means that today we are in a better position to compete in the market for larger businesses in the property insurance space, which is also yielding results in terms of growth. And many of our other initiatives by way of setting up specific verticals to target SMEs across the country, they are also contributing to the growth, which is why we are seeing a growth in fire business fairly robust as compared to the industry growth.
Sure. Just one question, I think, one follow-up and one question. One was on the retail renewal. How much of your business comes from renewal, annual number or quarterly, whichever works on the indemnity side? And one follow-up, when we discuss about claims here, you know, if you can highlight, do you get any favorable pricing agreement on your select hospital network? And in case you get it, can you quantify a broad range for it?
Our health renewals indemnity is at about 70%.
Okay, sure.
It is there, and yes, our network, we have a network of over 10,500 hospitals, which is mentioned somewhere in the deck. And we are continuously engaging with the various hospitals for based on the volumes that get directed there. We don't direct it. It's a question of where the claimant happens to live, and we keep track. We go back to the hospitals for better negotiation. Benchmarking also is continuously done. So we are seeing some improvements over a point to point. We do track that meticulously, the month-on-month improvements that we get by way of discounts.
Just one clarification, when you mention the renewal ratio at 70%, is it renewal premiums to overall premiums in a particular period, or is it renewal as a proportion of the overall premiums that was originated in the prior period?
Renewals we always see in terms of number of policies, the policy holders. So
policies which were to be renewed and which got renewed.
Yeah, sum insured varies from policy to policy, and in tandem with that, the premium may differ. So the industry always tracks renewals in terms of number of policies.
Yes, but this will be like the number of policies up for renewal and the policies which got renewed during the period, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, sure. That's all from my side, and thanks and all the best.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, our last question is from the line of Devansh Negotia from SIMPL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir. Thanks a lot for the follow-up. Can you tell us the expected yield for the next 1 year and for the year after that, once our FD matures and then we reshuffle it? So expected investment yield for FY23 and FY24.
That would clearly be a function of while the investment corpus accretion that we will have. In a normal scenario, we expect to have a net accretion of about 2,000 crores. Very clearly. So to put a number, say March 23, we could well see the corpus ending at about 14,500 crores.
Mm-hmm.
And the incremental yield, that will naturally be market linked, market related. And we can also safely assume that we are underweighted in terms of equity. And we could very well see the growth in the equity book to about 4 to 5% over the next 2 years. So then thereafter, I would leave you to do the math.
So let's say if the interest rates which are there as on today and those interest rates stay for next 2 years, then what would be our expected investment yield?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Just a directional number. I mean, let's say if the interest rates stay flat for the next 2 years, based on the expected yield today, what would be the investment yield on the book for next 1 or 2 years? If the interest rates don't change for next year. So just a directional number would be, not looking for a retail size.
We have provided the current yield as far as Q1 is concerned. And then we have also said that we are deploying the incremental accretion in the higher yields. Even I indicated around 7.7 is the range of, you know, redeployable yields. So it's a mix of the two. Basically, that 14,500 crores is the closing investment that we talked about, and then out of that, around 2,500 crores may be the element of the higher investment yield. The current yield is also, you know, depending on the maturity of the, you know, the buckets that are going on. So it's a question of, you know, current yield we have given, and we are deploying in the higher yield on the incremental part we have given. The remaining math will do on that. It will be on the upper side, you know, as far as current yield is going to be a bit from month on month is concerned. Because there is going to be an incremental investment deployed in a higher yield.
Okay. And what would be, let's say, the shuffle in the portfolio as a percentage for next 1 year? When we say some FDs will mature, so what would be the kind of churn that will happen?
Churn depends on majority of our investments are in the debt book. As Suri has mentioned about that, equity book is not so much mature. So the maturity book is actually, you know, we have said about that 3.6 years is the average duration for it. Some part of it we have deployed in the fixed deposit, around 5% on the book is there as a part of that, which will get matured in 1 year part. So the part which will get matured in the current year will get in, will also get into the level of, you know, higher investment yield. In addition to the accretion accretion we are getting from the operational surplus.
Okay. What would be the reversal of, if you could just help us understand, what is the reversal of premium deficiency reserve of rupees 9 crore in this quarter? What is that related to?
You are talking about the premium deficiency reserve reversal?
Yes, yes.
This happened in March 22, not in the current Q1.
Okay.
And relates to mainly on the COVID claims. So the exposure is not there. So the reversal happened as per the, you know, IRDA regulation. It has nothing to do with any management intention or something like that. It's a COVID product level of the UPR that was carried in 2021. So the premium deficiency was created on that particular front. So when the exposure gone out, the reserve also reversed. This was in March 22, not in Q1.
Okay, got it. And then within our OPEX, so like I had the question for ad and promotion, similar question for outsourcing and employee cost as well. Over there also the run rate of 7-8% has moved up to 11%. So even that increase is structurally because of upfront increase in the operating expense for long-term policies or there has been some step up in the employee count or some salary increases that have happened or some perspective if you can share.
No, as far as Cholamis is concerned, the outsourcing expenses was not there as a part of the reclassification that was done. If you look at the, you know, the financial accounts of March 22, there's a clear note there. You know, it is all the staff related. We have two wings of the employee cost. So the outsourcing part is mainly constituting the element of manpower cost, 100% on that, which we reclassified into staff cost in the year March 22. We have disclosed in the notes to costs also.
So basically, your both employee cost and outsource expense cost, they are both of them are employee cost, right?
Employee cost that we have already moved in March 22.
Correct. The sum addition of both was like around 7%. Even that has moved to 11%, 11-12%. So I'm just trying to understand over here also, the change in accounting policy has led to this step up from 7-8% to 11%. That has happened structurally, or there has been some step up in the employee count. That is where my question is coming from. So if I go by the exact numbers, before March 20, if I add the employee cost and outsourcing expense as a percentage of net written premium, it used to be around 6.5-7%. Over last 1 to 2 years, that has moved up to 11-12%. So that is where I'm trying to understand what part of this delta of 4.5% is because of this accounting policy change, and what portion is related to actual step up in the employee
change. As I mentioned, in March 22, we have reclassified the outsourcing expenses into staff expenses combined. So even earlier, if you look at the two expenses, salary cost, employee-related cost and outsourcing, and compare it to the March 22, there will not be a bigger change in that.
So there is a bigger change. I'm actually going by the data.
Probably you can come offline on that to explain.
Yeah. Okay. That's it from me. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now have the conference over to the management for closing comments.
I'd like to thank all the participants who joined the call. So as you would have heard from Mr. Suri, Chola MS is poised for strong growth through the year. And these comments conclude the call. Stay safe. Thank you. Thanks,
everyone. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much, members of the management team. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of DAM Capital Services, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.